Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
But first this morning, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is in Washington today, alongside leaders from Germany, Britain, France, Italy, Finland and the European Union, ahead of crunch meetings with the US President Donald Trump. Now, this follows on from last Friday's Trump-Putin meeting in Alaska, which has formed part of the outlines of a peace plan for Ukraine. And ahead of today's meeting, the EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen insisted that international borders cannot be changed by force.
Ukraine must become a steel porcupine, undigestible for potential invaders. We welcome President Trump's willingness to contribute to Article 5-like security guarantees for Ukraine. And the coalition of the willing, including the European Union, is ready to do its share.
Well, President Zelensky said EU support is vital in achieving a ceasefire.
It's necessary to cease fire and work quickly on a final deal. We'll talk about it in Washington. Putin does not want to stop the killing, but he must do it.
Now, in a moment, we'll hear from a Ukrainian mother whose 18-year-old son has just been called up to defend his country. But first, let's get analysis from BBC security correspondent Frank Gardner and Professor of US and International Politics at the Clinton Institute in UCD, Scott Lucas. Frank, firstly, good morning to you and thank you for being with us.
Good morning, Claire.
In your analysis, what is at stake today, both for Ukraine and for Europe?
Everything. I'd take a tiny issue with your headline where you say a show of strength. I would say it's more a show of unity, because I'm not sure that Europe has a particularly strong card to play here, because the reality is that without US backing, Ukraine is in real trouble. It's already losing slowly, incrementally on the battlefield. It hasn't got the strength of numbers to win this war. And its people are dying every day. So are Russia's, but Russia's got a bigger reserve of people. So what's on the table today is, broadly speaking, a proposal for Ukraine to trade some of its territory in return for secured, cast-iron security guarantees, we're told. Now, that's going to be very difficult because Ukraine's constitution prevents it from handing over land to anybody else, including Russia, without a referendum. And I think it would be an untenable position for President Zelensky. And that's why the Europeans, including the NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte, have gone there to Washington with him to kind of give him a bit of moral support to make sure he's not steamrolled into being forced to accept some impossible deal. Russia doesn't want to sign up to a ceasefire. Both Russia and America say, no, let's move to a final peace deal. President Putin has got no intention of giving up Crimea. He wants the Donbass, of which his forces already control roughly 70% of it. That's the eastern coal-producing area of Ukraine. And what he wants is to have the last remaining bit of the Donbass. And although on the map that doesn't look like Ukraine is giving up much more than, you know, it doesn't hold on to very much of it, but that's where some of its strongest defensive positions are. So if it gives that up, the road is not exactly clear all the way to Kyiv, but it's less defensible.
And this land for peace premise, how widely accepted is that? Because I see your colleague Joe Pike reporting today that privately Westminster and Keir Starmer accepts that that has to happen in some way. All of those allies who will be with President Zelensky today, are they of a similar view?
I'm not sure that they are. I mean, President Macron has been pretty bullish on this. I think, you know, there's going to have to be an element of realpolitik in all of this. Back in 2023, the year after the full-scale invasion, in the first part of that year, there was a belief that with Western support, with main battle tanks and new weapons and new uniforms, new kit, that Ukraine would be able to break the Russian occupation in the south of the country, to charge through all the way to the Black Sea, split the Russian occupation in two, and essentially win this war. That's past history. That counteroffensive failed drastically because Russia had enough time to build a massive minefield that stopped them in their tracks. So Ukraine knows that it cannot win this militarily. It's losing it very, very slowly. I mean, so slowly that at this rate, you know, it would take decades for the Russians to reach Kyiv. But nevertheless, it's a war that drags on Europe's borders. And it's all very well saying as long as it takes. The truth, which is a sort of oft-repeated mantra that I think Ursula von der Leyen, the European Commission president, repeated only yesterday. But the fact is that European nations are not going to be able to continue giving Ukraine the same volume of support that they have for the last 3 years indefinitely. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a push here. And I think the pressure is going to come on Ukraine to say, look, we know this is a flawed deal. It's a terrible deal. But it's if you don't take it, then we can't guarantee that all of our support is going to still be there in 5-10 years' time. So it's a very bitter pill for Ukraine to have to swallow.
And we're low on detail when it comes to the security guarantee that the Americans have put on the table, aren't we, Frank? We don't know what that might look like.
All we know is that what's being talked about, Claire, is something called an Article 5 style guarantee. Article 5 is one of the founding articles of the NATO Charter, which provides that if one NATO member is attacked, the entire alliance will come to its defense. So theoretically, if Russia decided to invade Estonia, which a lot of people think it might try to do in 5 years' time, then theoretically, the US cavalry will come charging over the hill and come to its defense. I'm not entirely sure that President Trump would do that, but nevertheless, that's the idea. Ukraine is not going to be allowed to join NATO. Trump has ruled that out, and Germany is against it as well, or has been. But it's being talked about an Article 5 style guarantee that would, I mean, you're right, the devil is in the detail, but theoretically, Western air forces would act as a deterrent patrolling over the skies of Ukraine, and should a Russian tank column decide to advance, break the ceasefire line and advance towards Kyiv, they would repel it. Well, I have to say, I think it'll be a brave Typhoon or F-35 pilot that fires that first missile that risks starting World War III.
Okay, and then just let's take a look at how this is going to work today. So the first meeting is between Donald Trump and Vladimir Zelensky, and then the other European leaders will be joining a little bit later on. So it'll be really interesting to see how that first meeting goes. Would you expect the Ukrainian president to almost play for time in a way until he has his allies in the room with him later on?
Yes, I think he's learned some bitter lessons on how to handle Donald Trump since that disastrous February the 28th showdown in the Oval Office, where, you know, he had both Donald Trump and J.D. Vance lecturing him and all the press corps there, including people who were very hostile to Ukraine. That guy who shouted, "Do you even own a suit?" Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it was humiliating for him, and actually gained President Zelensky a lot of popularity at home. His popularity was sliding before then. But it was seen as not so much an insult to him, but an insult to the whole country. You know, you don't have all the cards, you're gambling with World War III, you're gambling with people's lives, etc. It was an ambush. And that's one of the reasons why the Europeans are there today, to try to prevent that happening, to bolster him, to present a united front, and to convince Donald Trump that you cannot stitch together a deal behind closed doors with your pal Putin that cuts Ukraine out of the loop. The analogy, Claire, that I've used on BBC Breakfast this morning is of a kind of runaway train that last week in Alaska had just Russia and America on board that train, and Europe and Ukraine were left behind at the station. In fact, Ukraine wasn't even at the ticket barrier. But today, they are on board that train, but the Europeans and the Ukrainians are still in second class while Trump and Putin are up there in first.
Well, it's fascinating to see how it's going to play out today. Frank, thank you so much. I want to move to Scott Lucas now. I mean, Scott, just going back to what Frank said at the beginning, this is not so much a show of strength from the Europeans, but more a show of unity, because ultimately, really, this is all about the Americans and Russia. Do you agree?
It's a show of unity, but I have a different perspective. For two key reasons. The first is the position, I don't think, is as desperate as it has just been portrayed. Even on the front line, where Russia does have this manpower advantage, they've made very, very limited advances. not just in the recent weeks, but in recent months. I mean, in more than 2 years in this area of the Donetsk region, which is the key one we're talking about in eastern Ukraine, they've only taken four towns in more than 2 years. And they've actually struggled in recent weeks even to hold on to some areas, which they have claimed they have seized. More importantly, I think Russia has got its own constraints, especially economic constraints, which I can talk about with you another time. And it's facing daily Ukrainian attacks on their key installations, such as oil refineries. But I think the big area where I would sort of add to what Frank has said is I think there's a glimmer of a deal being on the table that would allow Europe and Ukraine to regain the initiative. And this is what they'll present today. They'll say that they're willing to accept the short-term Russian occupation of the areas which it does hold in East and Southern and South Ukraine, as well as Crimea. In return, Ukraine will get security guarantees, which is a big shift by the Americans to contemplate those security guarantees, which would be, as we have heard, a commitment to defend Ukraine if it is attacked again. And there's a couple of red lines that Ukraine and Europe will set as part of that deal that they'll put forward. The first is that while they accept the Russian occupation of the areas that Russia holds, they will not agree to any further giving up of territory to Russia. In other words, areas that Ukraine controls that Vladimir Putin is demanding, and that is this Donetsk region. And then secondly, they will agree to the occupation of by Russia of Ukraine in the short term, but they will not agree to legal recognition of those areas as part of Russia. Question here is not just Donald Trump, but can they get key Trump administration officials to sign on to that so that they then get the political high ground going back to Putin after Trump caved in last Friday?
Yeah, and then, you know, you mentioned short-term occupation. How do you secure that guarantee that it is short-term, particularly when you're dealing with President Putin?
Well, a former Russian foreign minister has just posted on social media today, Andrei Kozarev. Look, Putin has broken agreements that he has signed in the past. So there's no question of trusting here. What you have to do is you have to make the security guarantees so rigorous that if Putin risks breaking the agreements again, Ukraine does not stand alone, which is where it was in 2022. So that means we're talking about, I think, and these are ideas that were talked about earlier this year, Keir Starmer, Emmanuel Macron, you have the presence of European forces, not on the front line, but within Ukraine, for example, in Ukraine's defense industry and in its defense factories, and you get the Americans invested into Ukrainian economic projects. That's what lies behind this rare earth mineral deal that we used to talk about, where everyone is part of Ukraine's ongoing political and economic sphere. So Ukraine, in effect, is moving closer to Europe militarily without a formal accession to NATO.
So, yeah, Scott, listening to you, you seem pretty certain that today is a very big and important day, right?
Oh, I think that's where I absolutely agree with Frank. I think this is bigger than last Friday. The fact of the matter is that Vladimir Putin played tactics to get Donald Trump, first of all, to drop the immediate threat to Russia, which was toughened sanctions, and to get Trump to not put a ceasefire as a priority. Europe and Ukraine are not just playing a short-term tactic here. They're playing a longer-term, basically strategic maneuver today, which is get Ukraine locked in on a path to European Union membership, get it locked in effectively as an associate of NATO, and then you effectively have a parallel to what we had in the Cold War between West Germany and East Germany.
Scott, thank you so much. Scott Lucas there. In a moment, we're going to get the view from Brussels from Bloomberg's bureau chief, Suzanne Lynch. But first, we're going to turn to Ukraine. And I'm joined now by Mariska Padalko, TV news anchor at Ukraine's Channel 1 Plus 1. Good morning, Mariska.
Good morning, Claire.
Thank you very much for joining us. And we spoke regularly in the early stages of the war. Just before we talk about what's happening in Washington, how have things been for you recently?
My husband has been still fighting, so I haven't seen him a lot. And my son has already signed some papers, and he's waiting to be called for and to be enlisted just to join his dad, because he's already 18 years old. He doesn't have to, but he wants to defend his country. At work, we are having a very difficult time because we have a lot of work with covering everything that is going on with all these negotiations. And it's a big challenge for Ukrainian journalists professionally and especially emotionally, because mm-hmm. we could never imagine we'll be going through this like 2 years ago.
And for you, it must be very difficult waiting for your son to be called, because we've spoken about this over the years, over the 3 years of the war. Mm-hmm. And I know that was something you were so worried about. Now it seems as though you're on, you know, the edge of the moment where that's going to happen.
Yes, you know, I have accepted this as his own choice, because every time I try to change his decision, his answer is, that's how you been bringing me up, this is the person that I've become, who I am because of my parents. So there is very little you can say, and I understand his aspiration, because he wants to live in Ukraine. He doesn't want to live in occupied Ukraine. He doesn't want to live in any other country, and he's 18, and that's his decision of an old man.
So are you very hopeful then, given all of that that's happening in your own life, that something may happen in Washington today to bring an end to all of this?
Well, it depends what you mean by the end, you know, because occupation can also mean an end. And that's not what we hope for. We just hope that European leaders, along with Zelensky, can convince Putin that actually, Putin invaded Ukraine, and the only way to stop this war is for Putin to stop, because now it looks like Zelensky started the war and that's his responsibility is to stop it.
Yeah, because Donald Trump says Vladimir Zelensky can end this war if he wants to. I mean, what's your reaction to that? What do you understand by that?
Well, Trump is actually saying, give up your territory, give up your aspiration to join NATO, and that's how you stop the war. Actually, we did some concession in 2014 when Crimea was occupied, when Donbass was occupied, when the world was silent, and it didn't help. We gave up nuclear weapons in 1994, and the United States and Russia guaranteed our sovereignty, and it never worked. So we don't see how this can end if Zelensky says we can give up Donbass. You know, Russia mm-hmm. could not have conquered in 12 years. So why would we give it to it?
But looking at what's going to happen in Washington today, do you feel any sense of comfort, Marishka, that President Zelensky is going to be accompanied by European leaders and by the British Prime Minister?
Oh, yes. I feel very comforted by this in many ways, because we remember what happened at the Oval Office in February. So I'm very happy that he's going to be supported by European leaders in terms of negotiations with Trump on the first hand. And on the other hand, it's much bigger than just negotiations with Trump. It's maybe a crucial point in this war when Europeans are going to become our biggest supporters and partners, because I don't feel that the war is going to mm-hmm. stop. And I think that it's going to change in many ways, because Europe now feels very vulnerable with all these negotiations that we've seen in Alaska, that we're thinking what country is going to be next for Russia to invade.
We do hear, though, don't we, since that meeting in Alaska, that there will be some form of US-backed security guarantee. Now, we don't have the detail of that. Mm-hmm. It won't be NATO membership, but does it give you some hope that there will be protection for Ukraine?
Not after 1994, when we gave up nuclear weapons and thought that we had guarantees from the United States, and it never happened. So we don't really view it very seriously as a true guarantee if it's not NATO. So, not a lot of hope for that.
Can you give me a sense of how Ukrainian people are feeling about all of this today? Are they very worried about it, or hopeful, or suspicious about the American motivation?
No, I think we're past that stage when we believe that US is our partner. So we're not very hopeful about this. And I think that after we read this Reuters report about Russia demands, I think now Zelensky feels much more support. Because, you know, after 3.5 years of fighting, people are very tired, people are exhausted. So many people have died. So many people fled. And I think that if Russia's demands were not as absurd as we read, maybe Zelensky will be under more pressure from the Ukrainian people to seek some compromise. Mm-hmm. But since the demands are not acceptable, I think Zelensky should feel much more confident today, personal view.
And do you expect, Marishka, that as a result of this meeting today, this series of meetings, that the fighting will come to an end?
Me personally, no, I don't. Unfortunately, I don't. Mm-hmm. But I'll be covering this in the 12 coming hours, so we'll see. But I don't have a little hope.
Well, Marishka Podalko, TV news anchor at Ukraine's Channel 1+1, thank you very much for joining us today. Let's get some further analysis now from Bloomberg's Brussels Bureau Chief, Suzanne Lynch. Suzanne, it was a bit of a surprise that we had all of these European leaders joining Vladimir Zelensky in Washington today. Did they effectively insert themselves into the process? How did it come about, do we know?
Yes, it was very much a kind of twist in the tale. Obviously, they were watching and preparing to speak online after the Alaska summit. But then, first of all, we heard that President Zelensky had flown to Brussels and he appeared alongside Ursula von der Leyen on Sunday in Brussels. And then as the day went on, it became clear that more and more EU leaders were joining this very last minute trip to Washington. So we have this really extraordinary scene now that we will see later today. And I can't think of any precedent where you've got this small group of very important, Europe's arguably most important leaders, if you like, in the White House, it seems, with Volodymyr Zelensky and Donald Trump. So, you know, there's no playbook for this. We don't know how this is going to go. We do know, as you explained earlier, the meeting itself will start around 3 p.m. local time there. But Donald Trump will be meeting Zelensky beforehand. But I think it's a win for Europe. And I think it's not great for Russia. I think that Vladimir Putin on Friday, I know obviously Ukraine and Europeans were very underwhelmed by what happened on Friday. But now we're in a situation that Europe is back in this game to an extent, and it has inserted itself back in the conversation. So that can only be a good thing for Ukraine. And I see even Russian media today is accusing Europe of being the obstacle to peace. It's obviously noticing that this meeting is happening today and is not happy about that.
Mm-hmm. And what is the expectation? What are you hearing? Are people very hopeful that there might be a breakthrough today?
I think what there is a sense that there is a lot of movement now, and that Donald Trump, but this may not be a good thing, but that Donald Trump wants to conclude things pretty quickly. This has been moving very quickly. There's talk then next of some kind of a trilateral summit involving Vladimir Putin and Zelensky in some other location. And, you know, that could happen quite soon, for example. And so I think the Europeans have felt they need to get involved now because this could reach some kind of conclusion very, very quickly. I think the presence of Europe, I mean, there's a couple of specifics they're going to be involved with in terms of the conversation. And first and foremost, that's this issue of security guarantees and what that might look like. Now, von der Leyen yesterday spoke again about continued support for Ukraine, but how this security guarantee, this NATO style, Article 5 style security guarantee would work in practice. Will it involve European troops in Ukraine? That's really one of the key issues that will be discussed, we expect, today, and that Europe is central to.
Suzanne, thank you very much for joining us, and we'll bring you any news that develops over the course of the morning as we go through. Coming up, though, will it be Sean Kelly or Heather Humphreys as the Fine Gael presidential candidate? Plus, our child psychologist, Dr. David Coleman, will be joining us after 11 o'clock this morning to answer your parenting questions. So do get them into us. The WhatsApp number you need is 0870 32 32 32.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.